So we did basically our usual meditation of being present to the breath, dropping down, being aware of our body, central alignment of our body. And then we took a little piece in there to consider how we are, you know, how we are in our lives, how we are with ourselves, the way, kind of an invitation to explore what it is that is going on in the background of our minds when we are, as we all do, pretending to meditate. So there's this little chatter. Maybe you're familiar with this. And the little chatterer says things like, this isn't going so well. Or it says things like, why did I come tonight? Or, so-and-so did such-and-such. That was really bad. I did such-and-such. I'm always doing such-and-such. Why do I always do such-and-such? When am I ever going to stop doing such-and-such? And so it's a very easy kind of sequential set of thoughts that we may be quite familiar with. So what we're talking about this summer, tonight, last time Harvey introduced this beautiful, beautiful topic of equanimity, which can also mean balance, real balance, has a sense also we can understand as evenness, being even-minded. What does it mean to be even-minded? What does it mean to you? Maybe we like getting all excited about the terrible news or gossiping about so-and-so did such-and-such. But what actually happens in our body, in our mind, when we are just kind of taken out of ourselves and filled with either a wanting or a distancing? I think Harvey mentioned last time that Tsongkhapa, the great Tsongkhapa, in retrospect, the founder of the so-called newest order of Tibetan Buddhism, the Gelug, the Yellow Hats, the Order of His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, so defines equanimity as a freedom from really gross, I'm adding a little nuance to the expression, but his words are attachment and hatred. Really, you know, the attachment meaning when you see someone or something in yourself that just, I want more of that. Finally, my mind has settled down. I want more of it. I want it now. I want it on command, on demand, continuously. Or somebody crosses my path, I don't like them so much. I judge. There's a judgment always behind this kind of attachment and hatred or dislike. Let's just call it liking and disliking. There's a judgment there, isn't there? I don't like this person. I am too good to be spending my time with this person. Or I'm not good enough to be spending my time with this person. Oh, you know, you're a great person. How could you talk to me? And we all have these feelings all the time, don't we? I can't be the only one, right? We feel higher or lower than other people. And that feeling is itself a judgment. And it's related in ways that we slowly will explore, not all tonight. It's related, of course, to some kind of sense of who I am, my me. My me-ness is not in harmony with your you-ness. And that's my judgment. So the cultivation of equanimity is not getting caught up in all that, is a freedom, a reduction of, you know how vulnerable we are to what other people say and do to us? Somebody looks at you the wrong way or uses a tone of voice that reflects that they're not so happy, probably it's all your fault, and we feel... what do you feel when you notice that? What does your body feel like? Are you settled in your stomach? Are you breathing deep? Are you tense? Or are you relaxed? Do you feel Is your attention zeroed in on something? In that very zeroing in, ignoring other things? Or is your attention open? Can you see the tree as well as the leaves? So what happens, so there's several things actually, there's several threads to the types of patterns, reaction patterns, tendencies, habits that we have, that equanimity is looking to untie. And this is what we're going to be talking about slowly, a few of them tonight, continuous. So one of the things is, as I mentioned, judgment. As soon as you go into powerful judgment about yourself or about someone else, what happens? Are you relaxed? Are you tense? Are you more aware of your surrounding or less aware? You know, when somebody does something wrong, it's like the chalk on the chalkboard, that horrible sound. Everybody goes, especially in fourth grade, you know, right? And then at that moment, your mind, your attention just collapses. That's what I mean by collapsing. It just collapses onto that particular irritating thing. And you forget all about how your mother hugged you that morning or, you know, a wonderful relationship that you have or whatever. Something irritant comes up, and for that moment, that's all that there is. And we lose our center and we lose our sense of equilibrium and we are not in equanimity. Make sense? It's common experience. We're just putting words on experiences that we know quite well. And we're also allowing ourselves to look into whether or not we feel we really want and need to be that way. Now, there's not an on-off switch. I'm not saying that after you leave here tonight, you will never again feel these non-equanimous judgments. It's a process. In fact, what I'm actually trying to do is to express the opposite. What I'm actually trying to do is describe, to begin with, just a few of the kinds of patterns that we have that are extremely powerful, so that we understand that when we're cultivating equanimity, we're really challenging ourselves in quite a deep way. And recognizing the depth of that challenge, we also want to recognize that patience is quite important. Patience. It's not going to change like that. It's a process. But it is also true, and now we have science talking about brain plasticity, so we even have science behind us saying that at any age, even at age 90, your brain, which means for us, your habit patterns can change. So if we start to orient ourselves toward equanimity by at least raising the question, most people, you know, don't even raise a question about getting irritated about this. I was having my teeth cleaned today. And the person who was cleaning my teeth, who is a very mild-mannered and pleasant person, was quite in a snit about the fact that somebody outside the door had been talking for 45 minutes. And then she said, and now it's 55 minutes. She was quite unhappy about it, right? And we have the pattern of when things are making us unhappy, and she kept coming back to it. She did remember to clean my teeth, but every once in a while she would have to stop and talk about how irritating this particular thing was, whereas I wasn't even noticing it. So we want to recognize that, you know, our ordinary way of going about things is we're quite ready to get caught up in whatever and have our whole inner world colored by the fact that somebody's talking outside our door and we don't like it, the fact that somebody doesn't appreciate what we did for them, the fact that somebody looks at us the wrong way, or somebody praises us. Oh my goodness, that's so wonderful. And we're just fluttering and we're so happy and we can't wait till they say it again or somebody else says it again. And of course that doesn't happen. And so we start to see that we're quite vulnerable, really, to whatever happens to be going on around us or inside us. And we learn that we can't control these circumstances. So I've just mentioned two big things that equanimity is a kind of counterbalance to. And I'm mentioning them first to express really how valuable equanimity is as a focus of cultivation, and then also to inoculate us against thinking that this is going to be an overnight cure, okay? Because our tendency to be judgmental is deep. The texts relate the cultivation of equanimity with the overcoming of pride. Judgment, see if you think this is true. When you make a judgment, is there a certain kind of pride there? And we're going to want to be able to separate out pride, which is tricky, from, you know, you do know some things and you can, okay, now it's appropriate to cross the street. Okay? Yes, you can stay out till 10 tonight. Yes, I should eat this and not that. So I'm not saying that in some, the texts don't suggest that equanimity is just kind of a collapse into indifference. We're going, as we proceed in just observing ourselves in the process of cultivating equanimity, we want to be aware that equanimity can be confused with a kind of dead neutrality. That's not what we're after, not a dead neutrality, but rather a kind of capaciousness where we see, Tsongkhapa says it as clearly as anyone that I happen to know. He says, you know, it's not like you don't know who your friends and enemies are after you become equanimous. You know. You have to call somebody in the middle of the night, you know who's going to help you out. It's not that you become stupid or just dully neutral, in some sense dead, but the follow-through that usually happens for us, which is, I want this person out of my sight, and particularly I don't care if they have happiness and the causes of happiness or are free from suffering and the causes of suffering that we begin our meditation with, I don't care about them. That's what we want to not fall into. That's equanimity. Yes, this person always gives me trouble. I might even plan to stay away from them if I need to, but I still want them to be happy. It's kind of a deeply held attitude. It doesn't mean that you always have to treat everybody in the same way. That would be a kind of stupidity also, right? But deep in your heart, you want them to have happiness. You want them to be free from suffering. You want, as we always sing, you want them to rest in their own clear mind sphere. That's a very, very deep wish that we always sing, right? In this bodhicitta, clear mind sphere means their real nature. Our real nature. We want to know it. We want everyone to know it. And no matter how horrible they are, even these people on the Supreme Court, dare I say, you know, we still want them. They disagree with them completely, perhaps. I don't know. Well, you must disagree with some of them, right? Either with five of them or with four of them. Whoever you disagree with, you still want them to have high. In other words, the emotional follow-through, what Tsongkhapa is saying is the emotional follow-through is where we want to gain or place our equanimity. So in the cultivation of equanimity, we are coming up against our own pride, our pride of being better than, or our pride of being worse than, which really means that we're coming up against our own, a kind of fundamental sense of our own sense of self in a certain kind of way. You know, I'm doing this wrong. Well, what is saying I'm doing this wrong means? It means that I'm quite proud that I actually have a, my real quality is to be, I meditate. You know, I should be somebody who just sits down and meditates really well all the time and doesn't get distracted, not like the other riffraff in the room, but but it's not going so well. And there's a judgment there. We might not so much think of this exactly as pride, but maybe if we look a little more deeply. There's, you know, it wounds us. We want to feel like we're as good as everybody else. And, you know, Harvey and I, when we talk with people about their meditation, it comes up a lot. And we have talked about this a lot, as you know, if you've been around, that, you know, oh, I'm not doing very well, I'm terrible, I don't spend enough time, I don't do this, I'm not good. What is that but judgment? Judgment, 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 judgment. That's quite different from saying, and I don't even know what that means if somebody says, I'm not spending enough time. What do you mean? What are you doing? That's judgment. That's not really information. Somebody says, well, you know, I wanted to do half an hour morning and evening, but I'm only doing 5 minutes every other morning. That's clear information. That's not a judgment. Saying, well, I wanted to do this and I didn't manage to do it. Okay, we can talk about that. But you haven't gone into a tailspin about, you know, how this is terrible and you can never manage to do what you want to do, and it's probably because when you were a child, all of that. And it's not irrelevant, actually. But it's not equanimous. So equanimity is a foundation for us. We cultivate it continuously. We orient towards it. We recognize that it is going to unpack our way of being in the world. Ken MacLeod talks about dismantling and, you know, destroying the patterns that we have. And that's what we're saying we're willing to do. If we're practitioners, if you are here as a practitioner, you are at least toying with the idea that you are willing to see more clearly what's going on with you. And that means what you feel in your body, how your emotions are, what your sense of being a me is. And you're willing to look at that. And you're willing to challenge it a bit with your cultivation of equanimity. Challenge is a, I think it's an important word, but don't get the wrong idea. It's the way that we challenge ourselves as practitioners is both, it's both tough and very gentle. We need equanimity, first of all, for our practice. And I think Harvey also talked about this some last time. So when we talk about equanimity, we are talking in one way about our own cultivation of equanimity. And we also, what we will be covering as we move along in this sequence, we wish everyone to have equanimity. Those are slightly different faces, you might say, of equanimity. Equanimity is when we cultivate, according to Shantideva or Tsongkhapa or the classic ways that the cultivation of love and compassion is taught in the Tibetan and Indian traditions, we cultivate equanimity as a ground of capacity to be able to cultivate love and compassion. We have talked about that in the past, and some of you have been here. Equanimity is also one of the four boundless states that we sang about also when we sing our bodhicitta verse. We say, I raise bodhi. That means I am developing an intention to completely fulfill my spiritual potential, what Buddhists call enlightenment. I am committing to doing that by way of the four boundless states, often called the four immeasurables. And interestingly enough, the four immeasurables, well, they're present in all in the early Theravada tradition. They are present in slightly different ways in the Indian and Tibetan traditions. They also appear in Ashtanga Yoga and the Patanjali Yoga Sutras. And there is one, Harvey pointed out to me, one sutra which seems to suggest that non-Buddhists were also cultivating the four immeasurables. In any case, they are profoundly, I would say, universal human values, really, beginning with equanimity. When we cultivate equanimity as beginners, people cultivating the four immeasurables, we cultivate, or the four boundless states, Longchenpa and many others advise that we begin with equanimity. because it gives us a ground. And so you have this verse here in from Longchenpa. Until you become equanimous toward those close to you and those distant, it will be difficult for the other three boundless states, love, compassion, and delight, sometimes called sympathetic joy, to arise. Therefore, the beginner should start with equanimity. He also notes here that those who are working closely with the teacher and who are working with creation phase practices of Tantra can be working with love. And later we'll see, in the fall, we're going to do the other three boundless states. And we'll see that Longchenpa and Jigme Lingpa in particular talk about the flexibility in the ordering of them, which is quite beautiful. Still, it is quite clear that equanimity has quite a significant place. And Longchenpa also quotes this beautiful metaphor. On the well-prepared ground of equanimity, the flowers of love are scattered. They are embellished with the shade of compassion and purified by the clear water of delight. So that's a way of expressing how these four go together. And our talking about and reflecting on equanimity is a way of also entering into the mandala, you might say, of these four immeasurables, these four boundless states. So maybe you can bring to mind a time when you tasted something of equanimity. If you had the good fortune as a child to be able to play, just enjoy yourself, when somebody was a parent or some probably older figure, maybe a sibling, was just there kind of in the room with you, watching you in a very uninterfering way, you know, not saying do this, do that, not inspecting you in any way, but you know, they were just there as kind of comfortable figure, a kind of holding the space in a gentle way, and you were able to just play, just be yourself, just be comfortable. That is a kind of touchstone for capacity for equanimity. You know, you weren't being fussed at and you weren't fussing with yourself. Or maybe if you didn't quite have that, still sometimes walking in nature, you felt held by the beauty of the trees or the sky. Maybe you thought some loving omniscientness was observing you. I used to think that. I used to wonder why I thought that when I was little. I always thought that some kind of watching is very uninterfering, non-judgmental, that's the point. And maybe you felt some kind of ease that we could call a kind of equanimity, some peace. That's very important, actually, as we cultivate equanimity to touch into that. Some experience that you had that makes you feel you know what this feels like. Even if it was fleeting, even if it doesn't come as often as you would like. There's some time when you're floating on your back, supported by water and just sky, and you're just held, and you know, you're not fussing with yourself, and nobody's judging you, and your mind is just open. And if somebody, you know, you're so at ease and so comfortable, if somebody comes splashing by, you know, it's okay. You don't care. It doesn't disturb your basic sense of being in easeful balance. So if you have a sense like that, just take a moment to tap into that. Just remember it. The meditation is also this, just sensing into your own experience. What does it feel like in your body? What does it feel like in your mind? In your emotions. your body feel? How does your belly feel? How do your shoulders feel? How do your hands feel? How do your mouth and cheeks feel? These are all places that can be tense. What's your emotional state like? Are you roiling with feelings, wanting, hating, or are you more quiet? And what is your attention like at that time, your mind? Is it zeroing in on some particular thing very tightly, or is it just kind of, you know, relaxed, open? And just sit in that for a moment. And then as a second step, you can ask yourself, well, if this is what equanimity, even the very, very beginning tip of the iceberg of equanimity feels like, then am I interested in cultivating the possibility of a little more equanimity in my life? Do I feel like there's kind of room in my aspirations for myself to seek out, cultivate equanimity? See how you feel about that. Not because some book says it's a good thing, but just based on your own experience and your own memory, your own touching into what equanimity might be like, is this something you're interested in furthering? And therefore, in noticing the things that you do, that circumstances that pull you out of this state of equanimity. And mostly we live quite outside it, truth be told. Are there good reasons for cultivating equanimity? Are your judgments always right? Are they helpful? Do you really know? In that moment when this person seems your worst enemy, even if they're your best friend, but in that moment something happens and you just snap. Is that something that corresponds either to your value system or to the truth? Think a little bit like that. This is also meditation, to reflect. Does it make sense to you to wish to cultivate equanimity? Do you want to make some kind of commitment, whatever word you might use, decision? Yes, I want to look into this. And then sit in that for a moment. So we've done three things, and there will be a fourth that we will add at another time. Right now we're mainly really talking about the first two, really. Sensing into whatever your experience of equanimity might be. That's quite important, because when we cultivate a quality like equanimity, this is not just a description in a book. This is not just some idea that we have, although it is also an idea that we have, and we do also read books and we learn about what is meant by equanimity. But we want to make actual contact through our own experience with a quality. And then we think about it. Does it make sense? In what way does it make sense? This is really what most of the texts address, why equanimity is appropriate. When we lack equanimity, as I mentioned, we really zero in on, so somebody does something wrong that you judge is wrong, or maybe just something that we don't like, and this person is now a kind of enemy of your own ease, you know, is a kind of foe, is a kind of, just disliked. And the thing is that at that moment, they are just unlikable. The texts talk about enemies, but most of us don't feel often that we have people that we call enemies, but we certainly have people who push our buttons. And they push our buttons because we have buttons. We have our ideas about how things should be. And when people don't accord with that, we don't like it. And that seems normal. That seems perfectly normal to us. In fact, people like to talk a lot about how so-and-so didn't do this that I don't like. And actually, that's most good part of our conversation in daily life. But if we kind of step back from that and consider really, really, really what is happening. So at this moment, when they do something that they don't like, that we don't like, they are being framed as if forever, as if this is their total depth of character. This is what they are. Somebody who's like chalk squeaking on a blackboard to me. How often have you said or heard someone say, I can't stand it when so-and-so does such and such? And we say this to ourselves, too. I don't think anyone in this room is excluded from that, possibly. Right? It's just the way we think. But we are going to take a look at that. Does that make any sense? Has that ever happened to you, that somebody who was a really dear and beloved to you, that they did something and you were just off the charts angry, hating them, and in that moment seeing them as terrible, foul, wrong, mean, right? And in that moment, as if they were forever and only that. So when we, and then, you know, you make up and then, oh, I'm sorry, I was tired, you know. And it's true, you were tired. Something happened and you're tired. That was never their entire character. So there's something about equanimity, which is a kind of ability to just stay open. Okay, this person is about to go off the deep end right now because whatever has happened has happened. But I keep a bigger picture in mind. Equanimity is kind of having a mind literally that is open, that sees the whole tree of the many, many interactions that you have had with any given person and not just the one leaf of this moment. Now, it so happens that holding on to self and other as real and reified and just the way they are right now as if it has always been and always will be is an error that we make all the time, and it's a pretty deep error, and it goes right to the heart of Buddhists talking about wrong ideas about how real and true and permanent and so on a self is. which is a little bit of a different topic, but for those of you who have studied it, and we will study it again together, I just want you to make this connection. Equanimity is not just about changing your mood, although it may involve that. It's also really about restructuring. It's about having an ability to say, okay, right now this person is really, really a problem. But that doesn't mean that that's the long and the short of what this person ever has been or will be to me or to anyone else. It's just kind of taking a bigger view. Is it making sense? It's not that collapsing into the present moment as if it always was and always will be, which is what 2 years or 2 years old, 2 year olds do. Right? That's what, when they drop their ice cream home and it's like the world is going to end because they'll never get another one and this is the only one that exists in the whole world, and that sort of desperation. And we all become two-year-olds sometimes. So equanimity is about being able to stay present to the whole movie and not just the one frame of the present moment. So in the end, and this is kind of a preview for a later conversation, but just to say what a deep practice this is, equanimity is also challenging our pretty universal human passion that everything should be permanent and enduring and stable and just the way we want it. We really want that. And so, when things go off course and don't say stable and enduring and just the way we want them, which of course they never do, we make judgments. Somebody is at fault. So we're going to have to tease that apart too, slowly, slowly, slowly. What we can begin to see is that as we work with our tendency to judge, and if you would like to take an assignment home for the next 2 weeks, just notice your judging mind when it arises, especially when you judge yourself. And then after that, we'll look at our judging of others. These are profoundly related, of course. Notice your judging mind. How often does it come up? I didn't do this right. I'm no good. I'm great. I'm really wonderful. Just notice it. Don't judge it, okay? Just notice, and notice, how do you feel when you're really down on yourself? Oh, my meditation is terrible. Or my meditation is great. Or my work, I'm doing well, or I'm not. When you get into that judging, just have some curiosity. Oh, how am I feeling now? How do you feel? How do what you feel is code for in our, you know, as practitioners, we're not just stopping in the street, this sort of pro forma, how do you feel? I feel great. No, how do you feel? I really mean, how do you feel? You know, how do you feel in your body? We forget about our bodies so much. They're very, 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 very wise. There's a lot of information. Just pay attention a little bit. Your stomach, your heart, your shoulders, your neck, even your hands. Sometimes you're sitting like this. So how do you feel? How does your body feel? What is your, you know, emotional tone like? Just added curiosity. Is your mind collapsed in? Is it opening out? Is it kind of open and seeing the big picture? So just look into that. There's no right, there's no wrong. And maybe you'll come back and you say, you know what? I feel great when I'm judging. I feel powerful and right. Okay, and we'll talk about that, okay? So just see how it is. Now, just one other word about this, and I'll stop, which is that, so there's beautiful material on this in many places in the Buddhist tradition. And one of the particular features of Longchenpa and Jigme Lingpa, who, as you know, are particularly important in the Heart Essence Vast Expanse tradition, and who everybody reads anyway, they talk about particularly Longchenpa, I'll start with him. For him, each of these immeasurable or boundless states is a portal to wisdom of the Buddha. So we see it's not a small thing. As we begin to thin out, which again is a long process, months and years, okay? So we have dedication. As we begin to thin out our tendency to judge, to leave outside of our positive motivation and aspirations for happiness all the people who annoy us, for example, to leave outside of our sphere of concern people who seem so much better off than us that why should we even think about them? As we begin to thin out the tendency to judge and the pride that and the sense of me-ness that undergirds that, we begin to be more even, more balanced. That's what equanimity means. And we begin to open a window toward what the Buddhists call the wisdom of sameness, or the wisdom of balance, we could say. This is one of five Buddha wisdoms. So what full spiritual maturity means, one of the things that it means, is that we have a kind of a sense of everything, you know, like the ocean, as they say, is salty in the top and salty in the bottom and salty in the middle. It's of one taste. And we sing, when we sing the recitation after meditation, we are actually praying to be able to recognize that everything is of one taste, which sounds quite mysterious. How can it be of one taste? Well, Longchenpa says, and Jigme Lingpa after him, that as we become more capable of genuinely being present as in balance and equanimity, no matter what arises, we become open to the possibility of the wisdom of recognizing that in some profound way, which may for some time remain mysterious to us, but nonetheless in some very real and profound way, there's a sameness in everything. Everything is the same in being, well, we can say impermanent. Everything is the same in being an expression of reality, just like every wave is the same in being an expression of the ocean, whether it's a, 10-story high surfing wave or a little ripple on the ocean eddying onto the shore, carrying a little feather of a bird or something like that. It's very different, right? We feel very different. Or the sky filled with black clouds, or like in Houston, sometimes it turns green. I never saw that any other place. It's really not changing. There's some sense in which the sky that is our nature is never changing, no matter what storms come across. And Longchenpa points out that the cultivation of equanimity is like a door opening to this wisdom of sameness. And he has such a statement about all of the immeasurables. So we will want to be exploring that as well.
If you enjoyed this teaching, please visit our website, donmountain.org, to subscribe to this course and find other great Dharma offerings. May all beings always have happiness and its causes. May all beings always be free of pain and its causes.